WGN Radio presents a conversation.
No, I don't think perfectly, sir.
A dialogue.
What are you prepared to do?
An astute debate.
Everything you can want.
And a peek behind the curtain of politics.
And Dan, what are you prepared to do?
I think Chicago is not only the center of the country, I think it's the center of the world.
Don't tread on them.
Where did this statement come from?
This is the Sunday Spin. Your host is the Chicago Tribune's Rick Pearson.
Good Sunday morning, everyone. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune, and welcome to this edition of the Sunday Spin for May the 13th, 2018. Happy Mother's Day. Thanks for joining us as we take our weekly look at the world of politics and policy as we go from City Hall to Springfield and all the way out to Washington, D.C. So time to grab that Sunday paper, get a hot cup of coffee, and we'll do our best to get your week and this Mother's Day off to a good start. Well, I know it looks dreary now, and downtown it's still a bit chilly, but at least it stopped raining for the time being.
That was not the case 3 hours ago.
No kidding. No kidding.
Quite a bit of rain on the way into work this morning.
Yes, and there are some street warnings with water backups and those kinds of things.
Which is why we have a flash flood watch in effect until 10. Storms continuing in the area here. Hopefully they'll move out of the way by the afternoon, though. And a little warmer as we get into the first part of the week.
Yes, but still not great weather this week, though.
Better
temperatures.
Better temperatures, but cloudy, some periodic storms into Tuesday, as I'm looking at Tom Skilling's forecast here. Friday, sunny, but then showers and thunderstorms once again. So we have that hanging over our heads really all week this week, but a little bit warmer weather, so that's always good.
So we're having our April and May is really what it is.
Having April in the middle of May.
Yes,
right?
Yes.
The April showers in May, so the May flowers will bloom in June.
Okay, so that means September will be like August.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, you get the idea. You get the idea.
A little time delay kind of thing.
Look at it this way, a prolonged fall.
Well, that would I could take that.
I could take that too. I like fall.
Yeah, that could work out very nice. Well, I know, Mr. Schwann, you had some great weather. You and your dad heading out to New York for a quick trip out there, and
right,
got to enjoy a great time out there.
Yeah, we did. New York, you have to experience it for yourself. There's just no other way. You know, videos, pictures, movies, other people relating stories, just you have to put yourself in the middle of it to experience it. It's just amazing.
And if you put yourself in the middle of it, you have no choice but to keep walking.
Yeah. Hell yeah. Yeah, that's right. Or someone will move you right along. But as you know, we were talking earlier this morning, Rick, we did not encounter, not once did we encounter unfriendly people with a real attitude,
chip
on their shoulder type of thing. The people in the restaurants, the hotel were just terrific. And talking with other folks around there, locals, cab drivers, boy, they had some stories. I'll tell you. It was just an amazing couple of days. We did go there to hear some jazz, and just exceeded our expectations. Talk about the weather, sunny and in the 70s. You know, we started out in the morning with jackets, but by 10, 11 o'clock in the morning, we didn't need them.
Well, I have no doubt that some of the nicety that was shown to you was all because of your father and not you.
I'll go along with that.
Your dapper dad.
I'll go along with that, yes.
I'm just taking a guess here. I mean, if it was like you and I, you think we'd get accorded the same kind of treatment?
Probably not.
No.
They'd just look at us and go, so what do you guys want?
Exactly.
What are you guys doing here?
Get back on the plane and get out of here.
Where you say you're from? Oh, the second city.
Right. Exactly. Exactly.
You know what? We did tell a few people that we were visiting from Chicago, and the reaction was, oh, Chicago, yeah, that's a cool city. So, again, was a very, very nice experience.
See, maybe we've grown up in people's minds in the Big Apple.
I think we might have, yeah, considering we have some of the best restaurants in the country here.
Right, right. and among other great things that we
exactly
have.
Exactly.
Well, Cubs and Sox again today, and it's been quite a series so far if you're a Cubs fan.
Yeah, especially if you're a Wilson Contreras fan.
Yes, amazing.
Another home run yesterday. He has, let's see, by my account, he has 10 RBIs in this series.
Seven in the first game.
Yeah.
And three.
Yeah.
Man, it's just amazing. Although, it was not a certain thing.
No, I mean, you know, the cliche and the mantra around the White Sox this year is Ricky's boys don't quit. And, you know, some people might think, oh, it's kind of hokey, but, you know, whatever. They don't win, you know, but what's the difference? Well, there's a big difference because you're trying to instill this never give up type of attitude with a young team.
Right.
And hope that they grasp it and take it with them and as the team in general. You know, welcome some more young players in and improves. I mean, that's just the way it is. I think Ricky was talking after the game yesterday about the fact that they did have the bases loaded with two outs in the bottom of the top of the ninth inning. Tying run at the plate. Jose Abreu, a guy you definitely want off the plate. And it just didn't happen. But he said that if this doesn't spur them on to think that they can play with the Cubs, then nothing will. So we'll see what happens today.
Yeah, I mean, not a great beginning. It was the second game in a row that the Cubs batted through the order.
Yeah, through nine guys out there. They scored five the first day against Carson Fulmer and four more yesterday against James Shields. So you think about it, you wipe off that first inning yesterday where it's tied. We might still be playing.
Lucky you.
Yeah.
I know after that, I was thinking of you with that 2 hour, 15 minute rain delay to start the game with no rain.
Yeah, it was frustrating. I mean, because, you know, they probably could have started the game. I'm sure they probably could have gotten through a couple of innings at that point. But the Cubs got burned by the situation about a week ago when they were in St. Louis, where I think the St. Louis management team knew that there was a storm coming in. And you know, you get a starting pitcher out there and you throw a half an inning. I mean, people say, well, you can't throw a half an inning and sit around for a while. It's difficult to do. And the Cubs lost their starter for that day. So I think that they were being very, 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 very cautious to make sure that, and I think not only for their sake, but also for the White Sox sake, that you could pencil in your starter and have him pitch for you more than, you know, half an inning.
Right. And, yeah, it's not as easy as it looks.
No, not at all. I mean, and, you know, for those that don't understand, I mean, when you, before the lineup cards are handed in to the umpires at the little meeting at home plate, the decision on whether to play or not to play is in the hands of the home team's management in consulting with Major League Baseball. So, you know, the Cubs obviously saw something on the radar that they thought was going to be something that would interrupt the game. And, you know, they're right. I mean, when it finally did rain, it was bad. And they wouldn't have been able to play through that.
They just thought it would be more imminent.
Yeah, they thought it was coming a little sooner. But you know how it is trying to forecast any weather in this town, especially that close to the lake.
Exactly, exactly. But so third game of the series today.
Yeah. We'll see if Lucas Giolito, see if he can bounce back from a subpar outing. He had a great one the outing before. It's going to be his third straight interleague start. He's faced the Cardinals, the Pirates, and now the Cubs in that order.
Wow. And I think Hendricks?
Yeah, Kyle Hendricks today. And pregame at 12:45. I'll be doing that for you. And then Ed and DJ with the first pitch at 1:20.
Great. We'll look forward to that. The NHL playoffs moving on. And I think the Golden Knights may have hit the wall.
You know, I think they may have. It's a great story regardless, just the fact that this expansion team gets to the Western Conference Final in its first year. And I think we talked about this last week, that it's a different way of putting together an expansion team than in years past.
Right. They changed the rules.
Yeah, they had a lot more to choose from, a lot more star-type quality players, which is good because, you know, you want a fan base to get interested right away. I don't think anybody would have imagined that they'd get to the Western Conference Final. But I think somebody told you a couple of weeks ago that the Winnipeg Jets might be a team to look out for.
Yes, Mr. Mazur. That well, we both talked about this. About truly so much of a reminder of the Hawks in 2010.
Yeah. And I think it was even the year before. It reminded me more of the year before when they didn't get the cup. They got the cup the next year. But they played Detroit real tough. And I think that, you know, right now the Jets have this combination of speed, strength, and skill, which those three S's you really could use in a Stanley Cup playoff game, and they got it yesterday. Dustin Byfuglien knocks somebody into next week. You don't take a run at him unless you're the same size or bigger, and there's very few guys same size or bigger than Byfuglien in the NHL.
No, I think Buff's like 265, and the guy that took a run at him was 225, yeah. And the immovable object was Dustin Byfuglien.
Yeah, it's like car into light pole. Light pole usually wins, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah,
it's not a good situation.
And the other thing, too, that Winnipeg's defense is just can be very stifling.
And you're on a hot goalie.
Ryan
Hellebuyck is a hot goalie, and, Marc-Andre Fleury has got NHL Stanley Cup experience with the Penguins, but if you remember, he didn't lead them to their last cup.
Right,
he was injured, and the young guy did. And you know, every once in a while, they saw some cracks in the armor of Marc-Andre Fleury. And I think if you get to him early, you might rattle him a little bit.
Right. So the playoffs continue, and it's the Caps and the Lightning play tonight.
Caps and Lightning,
Eastern Conference.
Game one and game two of the Western Conference playoffs tomorrow, also in Winnipeg.
So the season keeps rolling on as we get to June.
Yes, it does.
But it, like I said, it's been kind of hockey weather still. So
true.
What can I tell you? Dave's here to keep us up on all the news. Andy's got the latest sports. Producer Casera's here to field your calls at 312-981-7200. That's our text line as well, 312-981-7200. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/thesundayspin, on Twitter at symbol Sunday Spin. Engineer Bob is out planting tulips today. Remember, you can find all of our shows on WGNRadio.com. You can also get our podcast at iTunes by searching for my name, Rick Pearson. We're going to take a quick break. You're listening to the Sunday Spin on WGN. Welcome back to your Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson, and it's time for our weekly spin through national politics. And on the international front, the U.S. has offered some economic relief if North Korea goes ahead and continues its vow to get rid of its nuclear program, a significant victory for the Trump administration. In advance of planned talks with Kim Jong-un, North Korea released three U.S. detainees. The president greeted them as they arrived in Washington.
We're starting off on a new footing. This is a wonderful thing that he released the folks early. That was a big thing, very important to me. And I really think we have a very good chance of doing something very meaningful. And if anybody would have said that 5 years ago, 10 years ago, even a year ago, you would have said that's not possible.
So while there's one advancement involving nuclear arms and international relations, the president also announced what many had expected, that he was pulling the United States out of the multinational Iraq nuclear accord. The move came despite warnings from allies like France and Germany. Here's what the president had to say.
We will be instituting the highest level of economic sanction. Any nation that helps Iran in its quest for nuclear weapons could also be strongly sanctioned by the United States. America will not be held hostage to nuclear blackmail. We will not allow American cities to be threatened with destruction. And we will not allow a regime that chants death to America to gain access to the most deadly weapons on Earth.
So we have that on the international side. Meanwhile, more drama from President Trump's new lawyer, former New York Mayor Rudy Giuliani. He referred to Stormy Daniels' lawyer as a pimp. And last Sunday, under questioning from ABC's George Stephanopoulos, Giuliani basically said he didn't know facts from rumors as he took a shot at Stephanopoulos's former boss, Bill Clinton.
At some point, yes, but it could have been recently, it could have been a while back. Those are the facts that we're still working on and that, you know, maybe in a little bit of dispute. This is more rumor than it is anything else.
But that's what you said. You said that to BuzzFeed.
But here's the that's one of the possibilities and one of the rumors. The reality is
you stated it as fact.
Well, maybe I did, but right now I'm at the point where I'm learning, and I can't prove that. I can just say it's rumor. I can prove it's rumor, but I can't prove it's fact. Yeah, we will.
You said as a matter of fact on Hannity and BuzzFeed. You talked to the Washington Post about it.
I don't know. How do you separate fact and opinion?
When I
state an opinion, I'll say this is my opinion, and when I state a fact, I'll say.
You said the president worked out a retainer agreement with Michael Cohen after the election, order to repay him settlement to Stormy Daniels.
The second part of it, the last part of it, the retainer agreement was to repay expenses, which turns out to have included this one to the woman, the star on Saturday Night Live last night, trying to make more money. And now our NDA with her seems to be irrelevant because she wants to break it up because she wants to make a lot more money than $130,000. I never thought $130,000. I know this sounds funny to people there at home. I never thought $130,000 was a real payment. It's a nuisance payment. When I settled this, when it was real or a real possibility, it's a couple million dollars, not $130,000.
But
people don't go away from $130,000 with a meritorious claim.
You did call it a settlement payment. The president did make these payments to Michael Cohen over the course of 2017, according to you. Then why did, on April 5th, why did the president deny any knowledge of the payments when, in fact, he
made the payments? Well, I don't know. I don't know when the president learned about it. He could have learned about it after or not connected the whole thing at that time. The reality is, those are not facts that worry me as a lawyer. Those don't amount to anything. What is said to the press. That's political. What matters to me as a lawyer is...
to the press?
I don't know. You know a few presidents who did that. I don't think this president has done that.
That's Rudy Giuliani. You're listening to The Sunday Spin on WGN.
This is The Sunday Spin on 720 WGN. Once again, here's Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune.
Good Sunday morning. Happy Mother's Day. Welcome back to your Sunday Spin. Showtime has a great show called The Circus about the swirling politics in Washington and across the country. It airs on Sunday nights, and in fact, they have a special one-hour edition tonight. During the week, John Heilman spoke with Jack Quinn. He was the former White House counsel to Bill Clinton during the Whitewater investigation. And Heilman asked Quinn about Rudy Giuliani's effectiveness in helping Trump.
I know that Washington is chuckling and making light of Rudy tripping over himself in the last 48 hours. But this is deadly serious stuff. You know, the president deserves to be well served here. Rudy's off to a very bad start.
That's Jack Quinn, the former White House counsel to Bill Clinton during the Whitewater investigation. Well, joining me now on the phone is Jimmy Kemp. And Jimmy is the president of the Jack Kemp Foundation, which recently had a Kemp Forum on Friday here in the Pilsen neighborhood. And kind of an outlet for ideas and perhaps more than anything else, diverse views, but in a civil climate. Jimmy, thanks so much for joining me this morning.
Well, it's great to be here. Thanks for having me, Rick.
Would you start out just explaining, you know, what the Kemp Foundation is?
Sure. Well, the Jack Kemp Foundation established after its namesake, who is my father, Jack Kemp, who was a HUD secretary in the H.W. Bush administration. He was a congressman in the 70s and 80s. He was a football player in the American Football League with the Buffalo Bills in the 60s. And Dad had a unique political philosophy that he called the American idea. And he believed that Republicans and Democrats all believe in the American idea, or at least almost all Republicans and Democrats believe in the American idea, that we have inalienable rights in this country to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, as described in the Declaration of Independence. And so you can bring people together around those concepts, regardless of political divisions, as long as they're people of goodwill who are striving to address the problems of the day, the understanding that our form of government is the last great hope for civilization is what we believe the country is about and can be and should be about. So we're, in a sense, Rick, we're trying to tame the circus a little bit as you were talking about it. But we're never surprised by the circus because governing is hard work. So we have a Kemp Forum in Chicago on Friday, and it was a part of you know, the mission that we've set up to advance the American idea, or that we're trying to continue for my dad's career.
And also part of the continuing work about expanding opportunities.
Yes. So there's, we believe that democratic capitalism is the best way to unleash human potential. And so if you don't have opportunity in areas of this country, whether they're urban or rural, then the system is not working the way it should be. And I think obviously you hear a lot of frustration around the country with income inequality, with lack of opportunity. The economy is doing better. It has been since the recession, but it's not unleashing all the opportunity and growth that it should in some of the poorer sections of our country. And there are a lot of factors at play. So Friday, we wanted to come to Chicago. Speaker Paul Ryan asked us to do this back in 2015, and we did one in South Carolina in early 2016 after he asked us the year before. And he asked us to do a follow-up, and Todd Ricketts asked us to do that in Chicago. Todd had come to the first one in South Carolina, and when he heard we were going to do a second one, he said, well, we'd love to have you all come to Chicago. And so we've actually been to the community four times. We've been down in the south side, we've been in the west side, and what was great is that there was a combination of national, state, and local political officials, both Republicans and Democrats, civic leaders. We had four aldermen. The governor came and spoke, had an interview there. It's clear that Chicago is hungering for solutions and collaboration, and in the political climate that is way too divided. We heard a lot of interest and desire for politicians to understand what's really going on at the ground level and come up with solutions. And the one that I'd point out to that kept on coming up is new legislation out of a tax reform bill called Opportunity Zones, which the goal is to get capital into distressed communities. So that's one of the many solutions that were talked about.
Yeah, and certainly Speaker Ryan was very much touting that as a, you know, one example of trying to leverage kind of private investment into underserved, economically depressed areas, not just urban inner city areas, but throughout the country, and using it kind of as an investment tool with the trade-off of being able to receive tax breaks for a long-term investment.
Correct. So instead of the government saying, okay, we need more of your of the citizens' tax money, the goal is to attract private, as you said, private capital investment into distressed communities, provide a tax incentive in the form of 0% capital gains tax for 10 years if you go in and you invest in a distressed community as decided not by the federal government but by the state government. So the importance there being that local governments know best where the most challenged areas are, and there are certainly parameters, and the Department of Treasury is involved. So, you know, our government is so big, we're such a progressed society that all the decisions can't be made from Washington, D.C., certainly. And as you know, in Illinois, Springfield isn't exactly addressing the greatest challenges that Illinois is facing. But the goal is actually to get the people at the level, at the very local level, who are feeling the needs most significantly, get them to speak up and say, hey, we're here, we want to be an opportunity zone, and get the conversation with the state capitol, get it fixed, make sure the people are heard, and the capitol can get to places where it can do the most good.
We're speaking to Jimmy Kemp. He's president of the Jack Kemp Foundation. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune here in the Allstate Showcase Studio in Historic Tribune Tower on a kind of damp North Michigan Avenue this morning. And I'm speaking with Jimmy Kemp, and he is president of the Jack Kemp Foundation. The Kemp Foundation, the Kemp Forum, recently met in Chicago to talk about opportunities for enhancing opportunities in impoverished areas of the country. But also along with this, and Jimmy, you'd agree, and you kind of touched on this, the political circus is just, I mean, one of the things that frustrates me is what actually Speaker Ryan referred to as hyperpolarization that we've seen.
Yeah.
And that, you know, the fact of civil discourse and where has that gone? I mean, we have, you know, over the weekend, the report of a White House staffer saying, well, you know, what's it matter what John McCain says? He's dying anyway.
Right.
Just, I mean, that kind of temper just drives me to no end. And and I think the speaker was right when he talked about it's, you know, it's the 21st century and it's digital and it's internet. And basically, he used the term, it's weaponized polarization. And I know, you know, he kind of talked about it, you know, is there a way out of it? And maybe if you use the technology that we have to focus on data and outcomes and direct it to programs where you can have proven results, you get back into a fact kind of based way of dealing with society's problems. But do facts even matter anymore in this polarization?
Well, yes, ultimately facts.
Can you unpack that for me?
Well, I don't know. I certainly can't solve it. You know, just in our conversation or in a short amount of time, it's been a long time coming. And I think the speaker was right, and you know, focused on this, that it's not because of one person. This isn't a one-person issue. Yes, this president is unique. He's disruptive. We've never seen anything like it. And it's hard for many of us who have been in politics for a long time, or as he calls it, the swamp,
right,
to process how the discourse is coming from social media, from Twitter. And so it's something that is hard to process, but I think it's really interesting to understand that human nature in and of itself, we're never going to get rid of conflict. And a part of why I think people really appreciate the president is because he doesn't try to act nice in front of the cameras. People feel like behind the scenes, politicians are stabbing each other in the back all the time, and then they get in front of the camera, straighten their tie, and say something that is just for the cameras or the audience, right? And they feel with this president that he is disrupting that model. Certainly he is, and they want to see things for themselves instead of feeling like it's being done behind closed doors. They're frustrated because they don't think that government is responsive to the needs. And I don't think you can question that there's a lot of truth there. So there's always been conflict. We've had members of Congress, we've had elected officials and shoot each other back in the 19th century, you know, with duels and in the 18th century. I mean, so conflict is inevitable. I think the critical thing is that people compete their ideas and the substance, and we use technology to get good data, to get good facts. And will people spin those things? Yes, they will. That's always done. But in the long term, good leadership always wins out. And so I think it's really interesting to watch this administration, and they've actually made a lot of substantive progress on many areas, and they've worked with the Congress, and they got tax reform. Certainly we need to fix our tax code. Tax code is still incredibly way too complicated, but there are some good substantive things that are happening. The rhetoric, Rick, I agree with you, is poisonous and is not an example of what we want. But, you know, life is not, it's certainly not always a straight line. And the great thing about this country is that we have elections, and hopefully citizens will rise up and we'll get more voter participation and people will be more engaged. And ultimately, I think it will come around. It has to if our civilization wants to sustain itself.
I mean, you know, you talked about examples of things that you see are good things coming out of the administration, but then it's the administration's rhetoric that steps on them. And that's what everybody talks about.
Yes, it is. So people talk about that while a lot of work is happening, and some of it is from my perspective, is very good and necessary. We need less regulation in the country. And I think the foreign leaders, I think foreign countries, this, looking at the United States, they're now, you know, this is a different operation. We've never seen anything like this before. We will see what happens with North Korea and then obviously Iran. And these are critical issues. I certainly wouldn't approach these things the way the president has, but he also has a lot of good people working on some of these issues and having some of these world leaders put off balance by an unorthodox president. You know, it may turn out not to be a bad thing, despite the fact that it's not the way that you or I would do it. And I think it's really important for citizens to not be discouraged by all the smoke and mirrors and tweets and everything that's going on, but to actually focus more on the facts, on the substance, and for us to have that civil competition of ideas, because President Trump is going to be, he's going to serve for some length of time, and then he will be out. He's not king forever. Our institutions are holding, will continue to hold, I believe, and the country will go on, and government will go on, and it's certainly interesting to watch, and gives us a lot to talk about, doesn't it, Rick?
It sure does. So, Jimmy, let's go for what's next for expanding opportunity and keeping the drive alive.
Well, I think it's really important. Just for example, on opportunity zones, the governor's office and the state of Illinois are deciding where the census tracts are going to be that fit into the 25% of the poorest areas or zip codes in Illinois, and then opportunity funds are being set up, and then people in those communities need to recognize the chance they have to create businesses, to attract capital. And we need good jobs. We also need training. There needs to be good job training. Our schools need a heck of a lot of attention. Certainly in Chicago, they do. I live in Washington, D.C., and my kids have gone to both public and private schools, private Catholic schools here in D.C., and parents are always on the lookout for where their children are going to get the best opportunity. Where are their teachers who go the extra mile? We highlighted one from Earl Stem Elementary School in Chicago, who started a chess club with his own money. And Mr. O'Cool brought his chess team to the Kemp Forum on Friday, and it was one of the highlights of the forum. That these kids just shown when they were talking about what made them start the chess club, and then we set up we had a bunch of booths for local organizations to show off what they're doing. And after the kids did their presentation on stage, we had a few breaks, and some of our folks went over and played chess with them. And I think that some of our guests thought they were going to be able to beat these sixth and seventh graders, and they got their tails beat
in quick time. Yes.
Yeah. It was. You know, we had short breaks, but so obviously, education is a critical part of it. people need to know that there's a reason to get educated, that there are job opportunities out there. And in order to do that, you got to have capital. There are so many other issues, Rick. We touched on the, you know, a little bit beneath the surface on many of them. But we're going to continue to stay engaged in Chicago. Todd Ricketts and Sylvie Legere Ricketts have really helped us build relationships down the south side and the west side and the north side. We've been kind of all over Chicago in the last 6 months, and we'll be coming back. But there's organizations like Together Chicago, there's Project Hood, and a lot of other groups who we've met who are doing good work. And our hope was just that we could come amplify their message a little bit, have Speaker Ryan learn about what's going on in Chicago. He doesn't live far away in Janesville, and as he retires and goes back to Janesville, he's not too far from Chicago. He grew up watching WGN and loves the Cubs. So there's important dialogue that will continue. And it's important to pay attention to some of the legislation that's coming out, well, and demanding state and local legislators to get their jobs done.
We'll be keeping an eye on all of that, as well as the Kemp Foundation. Jimmy Kemp, thank you so much for joining me this morning.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me, Rick.
Now, the Sunday Spin continues on 720 WGN. Here's Rick Pearson.
Sunday morning. Welcome to the second hour of your Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune here in the Allstate Showcase Studio in Tribune Tower on a damp North Michigan Avenue on this Mother's Day. And joining me here in the studio is Paul Vallis, former Chicago Public Schools CEO, former city budget director, and current candidate for mayor of Chicago. Paul, thanks for joining me this
morning.
Thanks
for having me. Happy Mother's Day.
Happy Mother's Day to all the mothers out there. So the first question, why?
Well, I think the city's in trouble. I think they're in trouble financially. And when you're in constant financial crisis, it impacts your ability to deal with so many other things like public safety, like economic development, like infrastructure. And I'm not talking about the mega infrastructure projects. I'm talking about the type of infrastructure projects that directly impact working families, you know, like streets and roads and clean water mains and things like that. And it also impacts your ability to really provide economic opportunities that benefit the entire city. So, you know, so I think the city's headed in the wrong direction. Thus my decision to run.
Now, obviously, you've had an extensive financial background. I mean, dating back to when I think you and I first met, and you were doing a few years ago. I won't go any further.
Right. I was bald then too. I might add, so.
But. What are we not doing that we should be doing when it comes to restoring kind of financial stability in this city?
Well, you know, I see no long-term strategic planning. If you remember when I became CEO of the Chicago Public Schools, the first budget we submitted was a 5-year structurally balanced budget plan. We assessed what resources were available and what resources we could secure. We also realized that if the school district grew, we would get additional money, regardless of what the legislature wanted to do on the school funding side. So what we did was we designed a 5-year financial plan that was really intended to be a investment plan, because budgets need to be investment plans. And so what we did was we funded initiatives that were designed to make the schools more attractive, to grow the schools, to bring magnet programs to neighborhood schools, like the 18 international baccalaureate academies that we put in neighborhood high schools. And then that effect was, through a combination of fiscal discipline and the fact that the school district grew. I think we picked up 30,000 additional students during that 6-year period, the only period in the last 30 years that the school district has seen increased enrollment. We ended up beginning with a structural 5-year structural deficit of over $1 billion, and we left the school with an operating budget reserve of over $500 million. And when you counted all the other cash reserves from all the other funds and the net assets, it was like over $1 billion. And a fully funded pension system. It's the reason we got 12 bond rating upgrades. So I think what the state has to, what the city has to do is the city has to take that approach. And I just don't see that happening. You know, the budgets are political budgets. Look, they, the mayor in his first term literally punted on just about everything. He didn't make any tough decisions on the tax and spend side. And people say, well, should he have raised taxes earlier? If you had begun addressing the problems earlier, the long-term costs of addressing those problems would have been diminished. Because, as you well know, if you're not going to make the investments, if you're going to waive pension contributions for 4 or 5 years, or if you're not going to go to the state and get the state to change the law to provide equity and it's their contributions to the teacher retirement systems, which they could have done when Quinn was governor for 5 years, instead waiting until Ron was governor 6-7 years later, the pension fund itself would have over $1 billion in additional investments, meaning taxpayers over the long run would have spent, will be spending $1 billion less in contributions. So that's why you need long-term planning. And again, the long-term planning has to invest in the type of things that are going to help the city generate growth. Because ultimately, we solve our problems by growing, by growth. Because growth expands the tax base. Growth distributes the tax burden more broadly. Growth creates the economic opportunities for the West Side and the South Side and the areas that have been long neglected. And I see no strategy. I see whether it's policing, whether it's infrastructure, whether it's economic development. I just don't see any strategy there.
We're speaking with Paul Vallis. He is a candidate for mayor of Chicago. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson. Joining me here in the Allstate Showcase studio is Chicago mayoral candidate Paul Vallis. Paul, you've offered a kind of a template here. What about specifics?
Well, you know, my approach to this campaign is going to be to offer the type of specifics that people have not seen in traditional campaigns. You know, and so my goal in the coming weeks and in the coming months is to lay out my specific recommendations on every single issue facing this city. And on Monday, I'm going to talk about comprehensive public safety. How to deal in a comprehensive way with the public safety challenges this city is facing. I mean, we have more murders than L.A. And New York combined. Our clearance rates on shootings is 4%. Our clearance rates on homicides is 17%. I mean, that's scandalous. And it's not because we don't have good detectives. It's because they gutted the detectives division, and now they're rapidly trying to build it up. But the point is, I'm going to do that on economic development. I'm going to do that on how to address the issue of the 17 to 40-year-olds who are ex-offenders, who are TANF, who are chronically unemployed, who are high school dropouts, who have neither the skills nor the economic opportunities. I'm going to talk about the issue of infrastructure in the neighborhoods. And I'm obviously going to talk about the issue of how to develop a long-term financial plan and the things that you have to do to bring that financial plan in line in terms of having being able to structurally balance your budget, being able to make sure that you can fund the investment initiatives that are critical to moving the city forward. And in that process, I'm also going to talk about pensions. So my goal is to focus with great specificity on those issues. And I'm going to take the approach as if I had just gotten elected mayor, and what I'm going to be proposing are the things that I would be taking to the police department, I would be taking to the city council, I would be taking to the state legislature. Obviously, I tend to win, and I'm in it to win. But even more importantly than that, I'm in it to offer what I feel will be real solutions to deal with the real problems that Chicagoans are facing.
Well, obviously, you've got your press conference tomorrow on public safety. But, I mean, really, we seem at this very strange point with issues like carjackings and just, you know, people always talked about, oh, well, downtown, it's okay. It's, you know, the problems are elsewhere.
Not anymore.
That's what I mean. The problems are everywhere.
Well, look at the police strategy. You know, when I was budget director, Terry Hiller told me that he needed 13,500 police officers on the street. He needed 1,200 detectives. They needed a ratio of sergeants to officers. I was saying enlisted men. My sons were in the military, so I was I use military terms like, you know, boots on the ground and things like that. Sorry about that. It's not a reflection of my politics. It's just, there has been no strategy. The mayor comes in, he promises 1,000 cops. Where are they? You know what I mean? They took almost 1,000 positions out of the budget. You know, you can, some say it was even higher. So then they dismantle for many of the special units, etc. So the net effect is they don't have enough police officers to maintain beat integrity, and every single time there's a crisis, they're moving officers around. And sometimes they're moving officers from one district to a district that they're not familiar with. And not to patrol, but sometimes just to sit in cars. So at the end of the day, there's no continuity in terms of the level of police staffing in each of the districts. And when you're moving people around, because you don't have the supplemental officers that you can dispatch, when you're undermining beat integrity, that has a direct impact on your ability to combat crime. You know, they're paying people overtime to work in other districts rather than giving them overtime to work in their districts on their beats, patrolling neighborhoods that they know. The detectives division that I talked about. You know, in New York and L.A., the percentage of detectives that are the percentage of their police force is like 14-15%. Our percentage had dropped to, I think, 3 or 4%. They had gone from 1,200 detectives to a little over 600, depending on the numbers. Again, you see, you know, it's always hard to get definitive numbers, and you can figure out why. But who does that? And now, of course, they're rapidly rushing to hire more detectives back. But the detectives that they're hiring don't have a whole lot of experience, you know. And so you wonder why the clearance rate on shootings are 4%, or the clearance rates on murder are 17% compared to those in other cities. So it's that lack of stability. It's the lack of resources. What is the strategy? You know, technology is only going to take you so far. You know, we saw the press conferences about how technology is taking us to the next level. Yet in the last 2 to 3 weeks, there's another huge spike in crime. So you need a long-term strategy for the police department. And that long-term strategy also means that they have to have the resources. They have to have the resources and the support needed to be effective. You know, we talk about police accountability, and, you know, there's going to be a consent decree. I'm a strong supporter of accountability, but the ultimate accountability you have is when you have a police department that is adequately resourced, that has enough officers, that has the supervisory infrastructure to supervise these officers. You know, not a 1-in-30 ratio of sergeants to officers, but a 1-to-10 ratio of sergeants to officers. When you have training officers that can work with these young officers, you know, my middle boy, his training officer, oh my God, I mean, he still connects with his training officer. He's in San Antonio, Texas. And, he had his training officer, worked with him, so I don't know how many months, but he is still there for my son to reach out to. So there's that constant mentoring and things like that. So you need to create an infrastructure of accountability. And you know, if not equipping officers with alternatives to the use of lethal force, first of all, not providing them with the training, but secondly, not giving them the tools was sheer negligence. You know, the argument that we heard about why the officers couldn't have enough tasers. In New York City, they have 15,000 tasers. What was the number? Now they finally purchased enough tasers to provide to the officers. Of course, they haven't trained all the officers yet, but look at the number of years when they weren't purchasing tasers. And some people were using the lack of funding as an excuse. How much have we paid out in lawsuits since 2004? Somebody told me it's over $600 million. Somebody told me since 2011 it's approaching $280-290 million. One less lawsuit payout would have funded the tasers, and the taser training. So I see no strategy. I see no plan. I see negligence. And it's because everything is politicized. It's the D.C. politics of we're working for the next election. We've got to raise enough money to scare our opponents out of the race. We're making decisions that based on politics, not based on the real needs of working men and women who are police officers and firefighters and city workers, etc. You know, individuals who have to go to work every day and provide a service, but living in continual uncertainty as to whether or not their mission is going to change or their assignment is going to be altered because of some change in political priority. And I think that's the fundamental problem. We've imported kind of the Washington, D.C. Political management approach to the management of our city.
That's Paul Vallis, Chicago mayoral candidate, former CEO of the Chicago Public Schools. Paul, thank you so much for joining me this morning.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Now back to the Tribune's Rick Pearson. It's the Sunday Spin on 720 WGN.
Good Sunday morning. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. In our kind of take through some of the national politics, we've been talking a little bit about Rudy Giuliani. And Giuliani has adopted Donald Trump's tactics of name-calling. Former FBI Director James Comey told the Washington Post that he was excited when he first went to work for Giuliani in the federal prosecutor's office in New York, but things changed.
I was fired up and thought it was exciting to work for Rudy, and it was. It wasn't until I tried to become a leader myself that I saw some of the underside of that confidence, which was it wasn't leavened with a whole lot of humility, which is really important to being a leader, to have that balance. And so I use him almost as a counterpoint in the book and compare him to another U.S. attorney I worked for named Helen Fahey, who had this remarkable balance of confidence and humility. So my view is of him as a leader changed over time, and the name calling and whatnot, and I don't know what's going on with that, honestly. I said to someone the other day, I guess the love is gone. I used to be one of his star prosecutors. It appears I'm not anymore.
That's former FBI Director James Comey. Joining me now here in the Allstate Showcase studio is Illinois State Treasurer Michael Frerichs. Mr. Treasurer, thanks so much for joining me this morning.
Rick, thanks for having me here today. I need to take this time, though, to wish my mother a happy Mother's Day.
Absolutely.
I'm up here in Chicago. She's down in Gifford, Illinois. Mom, happy Mother's Day.
Well, you'll be seeing her today, right?
Maybe later this evening.
Okay.
It depends what time I get done with my stuff up here.
You got her something, didn't you?
One of the problems with being involved in politics is you have busy schedules. You don't spend as much time with family as you would like. But I called her this morning before coming up here. If she's listening, she knows this. It's not a surprise. She's not a big fan of politics. She constantly asks me why I do this. Wasn't know why I subject myself to this. And especially when you hit campaign season and the other side starts lobbing bombs at you and calling you names. I've developed a really thick skin. I don't think my mother has developed thick skin. She doesn't like it when people say bad things about her son.
I don't think moms develop thick skins with their children.
No. And every season she tells me, why do you put yourself through this? Why do you put me through this? And I tell her, Mom, do you think the other side, are they good people when they do this? And she'll say, no. I said, well, then if we don't run, then bad people win. We run because you raised me right. You raised me to do good, to help and serve people, and that's why we run. And I think she gets it, but she doesn't always enjoy.
I like, why are you putting me through this?
Yes.
Well, you just had a very successful unclaimed property auction here in Chicago.
We did. It was very exciting. We're hopeful that someone out there surprising their mother today with a rare, unique item. We auctioned off some unclaimed property, things that people perhaps put in a safe deposit box and either forgot about or passed away. We try very hard in our office to return that property to its rightful owner or heirs, and we will look for 10 years. But if after 10 years no one claims it, our vault starts to fill up, and we need to create space. So we auction off these items. Now, the state does not keep this money. It does not solve our budget problems. We will hold on to it. We're the custodian of these artifacts, these valuables. And if someday the owner does come to us, or their heirs, their children, their grandchildren, we will give them the value that the piece sold for at auction.
So what kind of things were auctioned yesterday?
Well, I'll tell you that the state.
What would I have been on?
Well, normally we have some baseball cards or sports memorabilia. Didn't have very much in this one, but I auctioned off a half dollar, centennial half dollar from 1918 with Abraham Lincoln's head on it. I like to tell people that I have a soft spot in my heart for tall, lanky, bearded politicians from central Illinois. And it was quite the spirited bidding. I think it ended up going for about $325 for a half dollar. So that's quite the inflation from 1918, 100 years later, 50 cents to over $300.
And, of course, we're in our bicycle.
Maybe they're $200. I think I'm exaggerating. That's over $200. And Illinois is also exciting because we're in our bicentennial year now, and we're actually having a coin contest. The voters, your listeners out there, will be able to vote. We've picked five coin designs. We'll let the voters of the state vote on which one will get stamped on the official Illinois bicentennial coin.
And how do they do that?
Well, they can go to IllinoisCoinContest.com to look and eventually buy some. We're going to mint these and then sell them to people in the state.
And where does that money go?
That money will go to pay for the cost of minting the coins, and that will probably help the state treasury a little bit. It depends how popular of a coin we pick, how much money it's going to raise.
Well, speaking of money, here we are closing in on the final weeks of the scheduled spring legislative session. Here we are again, kind of with a back and forth over who truly wants to have a budget for the state of Illinois.
Yep. New day, same as the old day.
I mean, I tend to think everybody, both sides, want a budget for this time. I'd like to think that.
Everyone should think that. It's the way it should work. People should get elected to do this. I mean, even Jim Edgar said the most important thing for a governor is to have a good budget in place. It's difficult to manage the state without a good budget. I think the governor is probably realizing that now.
Well, we figured that out after 2 years.
Well, after two years, you would think that working without a budget would have convinced him, like, let's make a deal happen. But then the General Assembly Republicans came together in the House and passed a bipartisan budget, which the governor vetoed. But I think what he's finding is if you don't have your staff being part of the budget-making process, the legislature doesn't have as much information. They're not going to have as good of a budget. So you would think the governor would have a big incentive. Right now, though, there just seems to be an awful lot of posturing and spin, which I guess makes sense here on Sunday Spin. They're spinning 7 days a week trying to make the other side wear the jacket or take the blame for a lack of progress.
But what I find this time is that I don't think the public wants to hear the spin on either side, that after having been through what we saw over that 2 year period, even post that 2 year period with a budget, that there are still vital areas in this state, subject areas in the state that are still reeling from this.
I think you are right on. I think both sides rightfully believe that if we go without a budget, the other side is going to be blamed. But what they've come to realize is our side is also going to be blamed. And the one hope I have is there were about 10 Republicans in the House who broke ranks with the governor, who sat down, negotiated with House Democrats, and reached a budget and voted to override the governor's veto. And when I talked with some of them, they said, I asked them, are we going to get a budget this year? And the response has been, I sat through 2 years of no budget. I took an enormous amount of grief to pass a budget last year. I am not going through this again. We are going to have a budget. Now, what it will look like remains to be seen, but there seems to be a will out there, bipartisan will, to get something done.
Well, and I think one of the things that in that two-year impasse that we're talking about that occurred was particularly for some Republican members, including downstate members, where state institutions, yep, prisons, universities, you know, bore a lot of the brunt of this lack of funding and the diminishment that occurred. You look at SIU Carbondale,
oh, yeah,
and the trauma that they've gone through, where you virtually have SIU Edwardsville eclipsing Carbondale, the flagship of the SIU system.
Yeah, I think they're on pace this fall to potentially potentially have more students in Edwardsville than Carbondale, which would have been unheard of. And I think that's why you saw Republicans break ranks. Now, there was some good leadership out of the suburbs, Representative Harris, Representative Anderson, I think Fortner as well. But a lot of the Republicans who broke ranks had large state facilities in their districts, whether it be a university or a prison. You know, they saw the harm that was being done to their communities was not worth whatever glories Governor Rauner was proposing with his turnaround agenda. You know, yes, it would have been nice to have some of that, but to sit back and watch institutions that we have built up over decades crumble and dissolve was not worth it. And that's why they eventually broke ranks.
We're speaking with Illinois State Treasurer Mike Frericks. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson here in the Allstate Showcase studio, joined by Michael Frericks. He's the Democratic Illinois State Treasurer. We're talking about prospects for a budget. I mean, you know my thoughts. You think we're ultimately going to get one?
I think so. I try to remain optimistic, though. People ask me, why are you so positive? I say, one, because you have a choice every day you wake up. You can focus on things you can't control. And there are lots of those that are going bad and you can be miserable. Or you can focus on things you can control and then set about making improvements. And that's what we try and do in our office, and I hope others running for office doing the same.
Well, it's very real prospect here if a budget isn't adopted by the 31st that the credit rating tanks.
Oh, I've been warning that not only is it a real possibility, it is going to happen. If there is not a budget in place, I would say by July 1st. If not by May 31st, it's possible. By July 1st, it most definitely will be. We would be the first state in the country to have our general obligation bonds rated as junk. That is not a first that any state wants to have, should aspire to. And there are real consequences to it. Some people said, well, what do we care what some New York rating firm calls us? Well, it has a problem in terms of reputation, but it has a real problem in terms of being able to sell bonds and the rate of interest you're going to pay. We're already paying a huge premium in the state. I mean, there are millions and millions of dollars we are spending just paying interest we shouldn't have to. And that's money that could be going into fixing our roads and our bridges and investing in our schools.
And, well, explain that about the junk rating and investment.
Yeah, so since I have been in the treasurer's office, we're asked to sign off on debt issuance. The governor's office issues debt. They've done it numerous times since we've been in office. And since we had the budget impasse, every time we've sent a letter to the governor's office saying, before you go out and issue another $500 million in debt, why don't we get a budget in place that gives the rating agencies some certainty that might raise our rating? And then we would pay less in interest. For the numerous letters I have written, I have received zero responses.
Well, and if we go junk too, that means that various investment houses
call us, and we're going to have to come up with a lot of money in a hurry. And we're going to pay a lot more in interest. We shouldn't be messing around with this. I know that in politics, everyone has something they want. But politics should be the art of compromise, the art of the deal, making sure that we can get something and keep the state moving forward.
There's been a lot of talk, obviously, gubernatorial campaign. We heard a lot of talk about looking for new sources of revenue and a lot of talk about legalizing marijuana. Mm-hmm. You know, and obviously people are floating numbers that who knows? But I'm kind of curious what your thoughts are on that.
Well, it's something we work very closely with because Illinois has legalized medical cannabis. And entrepreneurs, business people went out and they invested in cultivating facilities, growers, and dispensaries. Invested millions of dollars
in this. And pretty strict regulation, too.
Very, very strict regulation in the state of Illinois who can qualify for these things. These are people who have severe illnesses, severe pain. Well, now they were operating well. They were working with local bank or with banks, but the Trump administration came in and Attorney General Sessions said that marijuana is a drug and we're going to enforce, we're going to prosecute. That's caused a lot of banks to pull out. Bank of Springfield now is that they're pulling out of this market.
Weren't they kind of sold, like, one of the sole
one of the biggest. They weren't the only one, but there's some smaller banks out there that, quite frankly, don't want their names mentioned. They will work with their clients, with their former customers, but they don't really want to expand this. They don't want to attract a lot of attention from the federal government. And even today, it's worse. The Trump administration has muddied the waters. They promised to be pro-business, but they are stifling legitimate businesses here in the state of Illinois. So there are businesses now that are going to pay their employees in cash. They carry around duffel bags full of cash. And criminals are aware of this. And so they become a target of crimes. That's a real, it just presents a lot of problems out there. We're working very hard with banks and credit unions to get them to work in this field, to bank these industries, because it also is helpful when they are paying their taxes and their fees. You know, we don't want to have someone coming in paying their taxes with a duffel bag full of cash. It's dangerous for all concerned.
I certainly wouldn't do it in Old St. Nicholas Hotel in Springfield. That would not be a good place to be. But what can you do to encourage that when, I mean, banking is a federally regulated activity?
Well, we do have state chartered banks out here. What we can do, though, is we think that these banks haven't been shut down yet. Quite frankly, I think if the feds are going to go after a bank or if they go after a state, they'll go after one that has legal recreational marijuana first. They'll go after Colorado or Washington or California. And if they start doing that, then a bank or credit union would have a chance to wind down. And so we're encouraging some banks out there are interested in getting in this field, but they have some problems with capitalization. We could put money in through a linked deposit program. And that's the kind of conversations we're having with financial institutions today.
So something we should stay tuned for.
Stay tuned. We're hopeful that we will be able to announce a solution sometime soon.
That's Democratic Treasurer Michael Frerichs. Mr. Treasurer, thank you so much, as always.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm surprised you didn't ask my special announcement. I'm here to announce I am not running for mayor of Chicago.
Okay, well, that narrows the field down to about 800. Thank you so much for that. Appreciate it very much.
Thank you. I was glad to give you that scoop.
You know what? I'm going to go upstairs right now and make sure that that's put out by the Chicago Tribune and everybody else.
As a resident of Champaign, Illinois, that shouldn't be a surprise to anyone. But I just figure with so many announcements out there, I would just clear the air.
And more to come.
Yes.
And still more to come. Mr. Treasurer, thank you so much for joining me.
Rick, thank you very much. And to all the mothers out there, hope you have a happy Mother's Day.